This is Gloria Minot Presents.
It's a landmark new biography of George Washington Carver. The book has come out. It's, I'm sure, in stores, and the author of that book is Dr. Christina Vella. She joins me this morning to talk about one of the most amazing lives when it comes to inventions and some of the things we now take for granted. He was a pioneer in some of those fields. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
What made you decide to do a biography on George Washington Carver, and who was he?
Well, the reason is part of who he was. He was so well known when I was a kid that you could ask a fourth grader who was the president of the United States, and the kid might or might not know, but if you asked him who George Washington Carver was, he certainly knew. And now he's faded from view, and I think that's kind of a shame because he was a true American hero. What he did was to go to Alabama, to the hills, to Tuskegee Institute, which was really like a secondary school, I guess, with very primitive laboratory, something you would find in a middle school lab. And he found that the farmers there, the sharecroppers, the tenant farmers, many of whom were black, he, of course, was a former slave, he was black, they were starving to death because cotton had leached the soil, so they were only able to raise less and less cotton, and that was the only cash crop of the South. So he tried to find something that would put nutrients back into the soil, and the product that he found was peanuts. Now, peanuts was no more a cash crop in those days than parsley was. So he had to find ways that farmers, if they raised these peanuts and built their soil back up, would be able to sell them. So he started developing products in this primitive lab and came up with something over 2,000. Everything from diesel fuel, gasoline, insecticide, linoleum, printer's ink, plastic, laundry soap, face lotion, all kinds of cosmetics. I could go on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, and he wouldn't take out patents on these. He gave his formulas away to companies that would develop the products, and then he would serve as chief consultant for the company for free. He wouldn't take any fees. And then he started on other things that were grown in the South, such as red clay in the hills.
Mm-hmm.
And he came up with all kinds of paints and tints that were then manufactured, weeds, 500 products from barnyard feathers, sweet potatoes, everything, kudzu, anything you can name, he developed a product from it. So he was really a very great man, and he also had a very dramatic private life, as I guess all of us do.
We're going to talk a bit about his private life, but what did he risk in traveling across America in search of an education? What did he face during
his
time?
That's a very good question. He was born in, as I say, a slave cabin in Diamond, Missouri, and he was kidnapped as a baby. His mother was kidnapped with him, but they never could find her. His owner, who was a very kindly man, ransomed a racehorse to get him back. But his vocal cords had been damaged by exposure to the weather, so his whole life he spoke like an aging soprano, very, very high, squeaky voice. Well, the place he was in Diamond had a school for its white mediocrities, but it would not allow its one black genius in it. So with the Carver's permission, he walked to the next town, which was Neosho, which was about 8 miles away, and he started just working for people. Just he would be a houseboy, or he'd clean the barn, or whatever he had to do for a few months, save his money, and then when he could support himself without working, he'd go to school. And he did that, work a few months, go to school a few months, work a few months. He finally graduated from high school that way when he was about 28. Now, this was when he was 10 years old. He walked off the farm and became self-supporting. And then he went on to work his way through Iowa State University and got a master's degree. and was really cherished by the faculty. Iowa State was the Harvard of agricultural schools. We don't think much about, oh, agriculture, we take it for granted. But remember that at that time, America wasn't feeding itself, and we were importing a lot of food. And so agriculture was the big up-and-coming thing. It was like IT services are now. So he made friends with a lot of people who became politicians in Washington, one of whom became a vice president, and others who were Secretary of Agriculture. And they begged him to stay. He was a full-fledged faculty member there at Iowa State when Booker T. Washington passed through the state and asked him if he would come to Alabama and teach in this little college that Booker T. Washington had established. So he went to his people in Alabama for $1,000 a year, and he stayed there the rest of his life, even though Thomas Edison offered him $100,000 a year to go work in the Edison laboratories.
What was his relationship like with Booker T. Washington?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Relationship, his relationship with Booker T. Washington.
Well, that, too, is an interesting question. Booker T. did a great deal for his race. And I don't begrudge him his obsequiousness to white people, because I don't think people realize the virulence of racism at that time. We have nothing to compare to it. So he had to do what he did. But he was one of the most obnoxious people I've ever come across in history. And he was particularly obnoxious to George Washington Carver. He thwarted his research. He was tremendously jealous of him. He criticized him incessantly. He fostered cabals against him. He was even instrumental in a woman whom George Washington Carver loved, in her throwing herself off the top of a building and killing herself. Booker T. had a great deal to do with that.
Well, let's talk about his salacious love life that we don't hear a lot about. It always makes good reading. talk to us about his 10-year love affair with a 23-year-old...
white man.
Okay.
Yes. He was 60 years old, very famous, and just fell madly, head over heels, in love with a young evangelist, who I think had an ambivalent feeling about the relationship. It went off and on for 10 years with the young heartbreaker sort of trying to keep his distance from Carver and then coming in close and then backing off again, until finally it was kind of interesting that one of Carver's best female friends, a really good friend, a close friend, was also in love with this man whose name was Jim Hardwick. I call him Jim Heartbreaker.
Okay.
And Jim managed to keep the two of them at a distance and secretly married a third woman, which, of course, just broke Carver's heart. But that pretty much ended the relationship. It certainly petered out after that.
Mm-hmm. My guest this morning is Dr. Christina Vella. We're talking about her new book, George Washington Carver, A Life. You're listening to WPFW Radio. We're 89.3 on your FM dial. I'm Gloria Minard. What is the story, Dr. Vella, behind this famous suit?
Oh, if there were three things people remembered about Carver, aside from his utter kindliness, Gloria, he was kindness itself. I've read thousands and thousands of his letters, and I've never come across a negative comment, a criticism. He was just, he was a love. But there were three things everybody knew about Carver. One was that he talked to flowers. Everywhere he went, he talked to plants. He murmured to them. He had little conversations with them. It was really, I'm sure, very cute.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing was this high, high squeaky voice that sounded so strange coming out of, you know, this tall man. And the other thing was that everywhere he went, he was clean, but he looked like a bum. He looked homeless. And it was a great mischief of his to arrive at a train station to be giving a lecture, whether he was lecturing at the White House or at Princeton or wherever he was. And he'd get to the train station, he'd be sitting on his luggage because the porters wouldn't even bother with him, he looked so derelict. And he'd be sitting there, and people would be running around looking for the famous George Washington Carver. And finally, when the platform was empty, they'd look at this old man, and they'd say, have you seen anybody who looked like, you know? And, of course, then he had his fun. He was the famous George Washington Carver. No matter where he went, he wore a suit that had been given to him when he left Iowa State to go and teach in Tuskegee. His graduate students and his colleagues put together and bought him a beautiful suit. He wore that suit exclusively for the rest of its life, his life, its life. It was in tatters, but he still wore it. It was in such bad shape, decade after decade it changed color, so that you have people reporting, and one decade that the suit was green, and then the next decade that it was brown, the next decade it was gray. It just faded and got more threadbare. And finally, there was some braiding on the back of the coat that fell off. He still wore it. I mean, it was just incredible. You see pictures of him in that suit, and it's laughable. But he loved it, and he would not take it off or anything.
Would you tell us about his appearance before the House Ways and Means Committee? What was that like?
Well, this was sort of at the beginning of his career in the 1920s. They were trying to get a higher tariff on peanuts because they were trying to support the local peanut industry. This was when George Washington Carver himself was at the bottom of this planting of peanuts, and people were beginning to try to do it. But they couldn't possibly compete with peanuts that were coming from South America, coming from other places. So they were trying to put on this tariff. Well, they call him before the committee to testify, and he stays there all day, and they say, okay, you've got 10 minutes to make your presentation. And he's a black man, remember, in Washington, in segregated Washington. He had had to lug all of his stuff up the servants' entrance. He couldn't go up to the committee room like anybody else. So he goes up there and he brings his suitcases full of samples, and he, you know, it's very crowded and it's hot and it's 4 p.m. and everybody's dying to go home, and they say, oh, we got to listen to this. And he sets everything up. It takes him 3 or 4 minutes of his 10-minute time to set up, and he starts talking and he shows them all the things that come from peanuts and what peanuts could mean to this country and how they could revive the South. And by the way, if I haven't mentioned it, by the time he died, peanuts was the third cash crop in Alabama and Georgia, so he certainly succeeded. But anyway, he shows them all this stuff, and people are absolutely fascinated. And so he says, well, my 10 minutes are up, so I guess I better pack up. And they say, no, no, wait a minute. Show us the other suitcase that you got. What have you got in there? And he said, oh, well, this is shaving cream. And this is something that you can put on babies for diaper rash. And this is this, and this is that. And so they start questioning him about how he developed these things and about his background. They gave him a standing ovation when he finally stopped talking after an hour and 45 minutes.
Mm.
So that's what a compelling speaker he was, and a compelling personality. I think it was his unpretentiousness and his humor. He was just the merriest person. He was funny and bright-spirited, open-hearted. The amazing thing to me is that in that atmosphere where black people, Negroes, were uniformly despised all over the South, where they were lynched all over the North, here is a man who, when Einstein said in my list of scientists, he was giving a big talk, and he said, in my list of the greatest scientists of our time, he named the first one, and then he said, George Washington Carver is the second one. And this audience of about 2,000 white people started clapping and hooting and agreeing and, you know, yes, George Washington Carver. He was loved. He was genuinely loved. He was somehow outside of the whole race issue.
Christina Vela received a PhD in modern European and U.S. history from Tulane University, where she's a visiting professor. She's a consultant for the U.S. State Department. She lectures widely on historical and biographical topics. Her books include The Hitler Kiss, Intimate Enemies, Indecent Secrets, and Carver, A Life. Thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you so much for the interview. You're a wonderful interviewer. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're a great, great guest. Take care, though.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
www.gloriaminot.com.